We're snorting cap rates and shooting up cash flow here at Deal Junkie.
Deal Junkies. Real estate podcast.
We might have to clip that out, but let's get started.
That's our
we're trying to kick off with a new intro and replace Gabe, but we've learned Gabe can't be replaced.
Enunciation is helpful.
He's the independent variable.
All right. With this episode, we kind of wanted to continue off the last and give people like some real examples of deals we've done starting out. So ideally, you can have some takeaways and, you know, implement it how you want to.
Yeah. You've got some beginner deals to share with us?
Yeah. We're interviewing Trevor. Trevor's the king of the house hack.
He is.
Well, I guess former king. You might not be reigning anymore. You had a couple years there, though.
Yeah, so to give people
context. Do you house hack anymore?
I haven't for a little bit, but I'm about to get back on it because my not house hacking was for a specific reason, though. I moved in with a girlfriend because we were trying to rent together and see what it was like to live together. I learned I should just bought a house and house hacked anyway, so I shouldn't have stopped house hacking.
But yeah, because you could do both.
I could have done both at the same time. And if things didn't work out, she could have moved out of my house rather than we're in a rental house together.
And that, to clarify, you didn't qualify for a couple of years either because you became a broker.
Part of it was I became a broker and I started my own business. So then you had to have 2 years of work history.
Yeah.
So that's part of the reason on the beginning where I had a hiatus on it.
Yeah. When to quit your job is a very tactical discussion. It can be a different podcast.
Yeah.
But no regrets.
No. And then I think how like people should house hack for as long as they can and choose to. Like you can house hack $1 million, $2 million homes and properties in a way. So it's a really good model of.
How long was Paul house hacking for?
Till he was like 50 something, 60 something
years. 20 some years he was a house hacker.
Yeah, he was living in a fourplex.
There's a lot of value in it.
Yeah.
So what is it, your first deal going to be a house hack? Is that what you're going to talk about?
Yeah, so I was just going to explain like how I got started with it because those are specific deals that we try to get, like it's just a model we try to get clients to repeat.
Yeah.
So I think it's pretty helpful.
So let's dig in. Is this the first deal after 8 months of studying or is this...
Yeah. So this is the first deal I did after a year of studying. Me and my buddies were all living together. I learned about house hacking. And then I was like, we're all renting rooms from this landlord. Why don't I just buy the house and you guys rent from me? I'll charge you less than you pay now. And we're good to go. So I bought this house that had like 5 rooms in it. Lived in one room. Mm-hmm. Rented out the other 4. Used an owner-occupied FHA loan with 3.5% down. I should have used a conventional loan instead of an FHA because my lender at that time had no clue what they were doing. I'm assuming they just got higher fees for selling me an FHA loan. The reason
I mean, there's a bias to your team member.
Yeah, not anymore, but at that point,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
but so why I say that is with an FHA loan, you have this thing called PMI, private mortgage insurance. If you put down less than 10% with an FHA loan, it's there for the life of the loan. If you get a conventional loan, the PMI goes away eventually. So your payment, in that case, it would have dropped like $250 a month at some point.
Yeah. And we talk about long-term fixed debt. That's significant in the calculation. Okay. So let's talk about the process. For 8 months, you were learning, figuring out, hey, I want to get into real estate. I like this idea. When did you start actually looking for houses and actually start underwriting deals?
Yeah. So I decided I wanted to house hack. So my first thing was figuring out what is my goal. My goal at that point wasn't to build a real estate portfolio. It was to cut my living expenses. I was like, I was paying $400 in rent and I was trying to cut it by more than that.
You're a monster.
Yeah. I was, so I was trying to figure out how to live for free. So I came across house hacking. That was the answer. And then I realized, okay, this doesn't work. If I have a 3-bedroom home, I'm going to have to pay to live here. More bedrooms doesn't cost me that more. I take on a bit more debt monthly, but the extra cash flow outweighs it.
So was that before you looked at any houses? You just realized that looking at spreadsheets, this was your aha moment. It doesn't pencil at 3. I need 4 or more.
Yep.
Okay.
And I didn't give a crap about like most of the things I maybe should have. I knew it was somewhere where I was willing to live. So it was going to be a good enough house and where all my buddies were willing to live. So it was going to be a fine enough house. And then I knew I could not do any work myself because I was not handy at all. I'd never painted anything. I'd never done any floors. I knew I was like, okay, I need to buy something that's just move in ready. Mm-hmm. So I was fine paying more and financing that in.
Yeah, you essentially financed in the lack of repairs. So you financed in repairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I could have done the same thing and bought a fixer-upper and done that whole route. And I've done that later on.
Yeah. You alluded to mistakes or things that you didn't look for that you didn't learn. What are some of those things that you missed?
On the front end of buying it?
Yeah.
Honestly, no. I don't think I had mistakes there. Honestly, like the first deal was ideal. Like I just bought this house.
Okay.
Very straightforward.
Yeah. Pretty straightforward. Ran some numbers. Was like, okay, here's what I'm going to bring in. I asked for utility bills on the front end because I was super hyper focused on it. I didn't even need to ask for them the deal pencils either way. But I was like, I wanted to know to the dollar. I was like worried about literally dollars at that point.
How did that mindset ever keep you from buying anything? That level of detail?
That's a good question.
I think that you got so addicted to the understanding of upside in real estate that you went too far the other direction, which was he realized it was a bottleneck. And so you didn't want it to be anymore.
So
maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, you are correct about that. So I started out as an investor trying to cut my living expenses. My whole goal, I was very clear on, I was trying to reach FIRE, financial independence, retire early.
Yep.
That was the only reason I was buying real estate. Then I met Gabe and I learned, holy crap, there's like cash flow is great, but there's way, if you want to build wealth and this whole thing, like that's not the only way to do it. And then I flipped to where I was like, let's acquire as much as possible. And then the goal became, let's get to this number of doors. And that was an ego play at mm-hmm. that point. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't have been the goal. The goal should have been like, hey, I'm going to acquire this much volume of real estate because it provides you this much of whatnot, but it was just 100 doors. Cause like 100 sounds cool.
I wouldn't say an ego play. I think everyone makes that because it's a misinformed goal. It's a misinformed metric.
Yeah.
Doors thing? Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a misinformed metric.
Yeah. You could have like 20 doors that perform way better than someone's 100, depending on how you did it and
right.
the debt and whatnot.
Yeah.
So like you can acquire a ton of properties and not be doing well.
Yeah. We just think of a big number. So we correlate it to success.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter if they're actually a success.
That was funny because we met with somebody who was very successful at a real estate meetup and we were talking about how many doors we had under contract and how many doors Trevor had. And then she looked at Trevor and she said, yeah, what's your net worth though? And then Trevor, obviously, and it's because you can have that number of doors and totally paid off looks a whole lot different than 95% leveraged, right? And so that was like a you know, one of those switches where just realizing that that's not a metric that matters. You can be drowning with 100 doors.
Yeah. The metric matters so much so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you meet Gabe after that first house hack or did you do other house hacks?
No. And then cause let's try to keep this beginner too, but, and give them actual advice. So I did that first house hack. I was like, this is great. I was living there for free. Well, cash on a little bit, maybe just living for free or whatever it was. And I was like, I need to do this again. So 10 months later, I did it again.
Why 10 months instead of a year? I thought you had to live in.
Good question. So typically you have to live in a property for a year. I lived in the property for a year, but when you buy your next property, you have a 60-day move-in period. So I was literally reading all the loan docs. And at that point, I was like, I want to retire as quick as possible. So I have to do this as fast as possible. So I closed on the 10-month mark to the day exactly, because I didn't even want to waste one day. I was like, no, I have to close this next property this point so I don't waste one day and move on.
No, Mr. Seller, I need 49 and a half days to close.
Yeah, exactly.
12 p.m. or 12 a.m. Eastern is when I can mm-hmm. close this deal. I love that. And I know you probably, that 2-month difference over 5 deals probably accelerated your growth career by like 8 years, right?
I mean, kind of, honestly. like you do it faster, yeah. It compounds quickly. So
right.
Like I was, because I knew I was hitting that next 10-month period. I started looking right away and figuring out mm-hmm. how do I buy this next deal? How do I have enough money to do it? How am I going to do it? What am I looking for? What did I learn from this? I learned having this many roommates was good. Here's the downsides. Here's how many bathrooms you need. That's why this mall is good. Here's why this mall is bad. Started thinking about it and then applied it to my next deal.
So there's a big jump between having built-in roommates, moving them into a new investment versus, okay, I'm now going to go find tenants. I'm going to buy a magnet, magnetize it, and move someone in.
Yes.
Talk about that.
So the next one, I didn't have any friends left in the area that wanted to live with me. I still had.
Oh, you had friends. They just went around.
I had a couple more friends still. But so then I learned, like, okay, how do you rent these properties out to just completely random people? And that was the next step. And I learned it's not actually that hard. Housing is in high demand for the right price and a clean, good property, and people want to live there. So I rented, did the same exact model, but I bought more bedrooms this time because it meant more cash flow. So I found a property that could accommodate that and had enough bathrooms, enough parking spaces and whatnot. Again, didn't know how to do work, so I didn't buy a property that needed anything. Just found the biggest house possible. Rented out the... yeah, I was looking for cash flow. So that was the goal.
the spreadsheet says...
Dude, I bought it was a 2,800 square foot home. So I was a 23-year-old buying a 2,800 square foot home on their own. I don't know what the lender and all them were thinking. They're like, why are you, because everyone, they're probably like, why are you buying this house? I was like, oh, I'm going to fill it with as many people as possible.
Did your loan application say online influencer?
No.
How many offers did you write before you got into your first house?
I don't know. On my first house, I had gone under contract on a few properties and went and like looked at them. I'd been through inspections on a few, and then there was just like too much work for me to do.
Oh, was it as simple as that?
Yeah, I was just like, I don't know how to do this work and I don't have enough funds to pay for it. Seller, will you pay for it? No. Okay, on to the next property.
Okay, so it was partially financially related, but it was also, I'm not going to solve that with physical labor.
Correct. Like it was one of them was like, and these were problems. I was a first time home buyer. I was scared of some of these problems because I just didn't know. I was like, oh, wait, I could have fixed these probably pretty easy, like looking back on them. But I didn't have someone like, I literally, to find my help, I went online, I Googled real estate agents near me and just picked a random real estate agent. And then I picked lenders near me and picked a random lender. And then realized like later on, like they didn't know anything. I was doing everything. But luckily, I read the contract and I was like, okay, here's what I need to do. And I just did it all myself kind of, but used them as a little bit of guidance.
I think that's an important lesson for people now, is that the biggest advantage you can gain in real estate, as we've alluded to before, is teams and partners, but just knowing who to ask the right question. It's like, I don't know, but I can find out. Because I know that this guy does this and there's no way he doesn't know somebody who can fix that or who knows the answer to that question. And so it's like just having that network and beginning to talk to people about, like, come to our meetup, go to Mike's meetup up in Portland, like just creating the network where it's like you're not using somebody who doesn't know what they're doing is potentially the best way to save yourself a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize that the offer being submitted to the seller has more than just that name on the contract. What comes along with it is that approval letter and the communication from the broker and the clear picture of success that you are selling as part of that package to then acquire that real estate. And if you don't have the right team that understands your business model, your goals, and what you're trying to accomplish, how are they going to advocate for you?
Yeah, and at that point, I was pretty clear on what I was looking for, so I didn't really need them other than like, hey, write this offer.
Yeah.
So that was good. One other thing I remember, actually. So this house, I actually had passed up on it multiple times. The first one I bought, because I thought it was like $3,000 overpriced for me. I was literally worried about like $3,000, which is like whatever, $2 a month difference. And I was looking at houses that were way less of a fit for what I was trying to do, because they're like $20,000 difference in price.
Yeah.
But eventually, like, I couldn't find anything, so I just settled on this thing and bought it for the first one. And I realized, like, oh, that didn't even matter. So, like, when we work with people now, it's like, dude, $20,000 financed over 30 years means nothing to you. And I didn't understand that at the point.
Yeah. And that's how and why real estate inflates in value.
Mm-hmm.
And how bidding wars happen.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And it's not a bad thing.
No, it's actually because of buyer's brokerage fees. That's why real estate has inflated over the last 100 years.
I'm figuring out right now, how can I pay a buyer's broker $50,000?
Can't do it. It's impossible.
On a $400,000 deal.
The market won't bear it. Trevor and I can help. Actually, I take back everything. Yeah.
These guys are making inside jokes. Go listen to the NAR
yeah, episode. Yeah, listen to the NAR episode. I think it's 17 and 18. But.
Okay, so getting back to this. So your team, okay, so you did look at other pieces of real estate. You did finally settle in on this one. You bought it. You moved in. Didn't have to do any work. You guys are having parties. You don't have to do tenant like rent collections. How does rent collection go when you're trying to collect rent from a friend?
When I did that, so I had learned about it was called it's through apartments.com. It was Cozy. It was called
Cozy.co.
Yeah. So is that it's now apartments.com. And it's just, I just set them up on there. They could collect rent. I'd manage if they sent me rent or not. I sent them notices if they didn't. And I just did my rent through there and then direct deposit into my bank account. So I didn't do like Zelle or Venmo or have them give me checks. I just did it all through online.
Okay. So then you build more, did you build more skills or you were just set, this is my goal. I'm going to do this house hack thing. I'm just going
to
go buy them.
I learned how to run the numbers and then actually collect rent. Cause then I would have run in the situation where my buddy, he's like, hey, I can't pay you right now.
Yep.
And then how you figure out how to deal with that.
I was going
to
ask you when you had your first, I can't pay conversation.
Yeah. Well, a little later on, I realized I wasn't super on top of everything. This was a point when I wasn't tracking my stuff. I took that year-long experiment of not tracking things.
Great time.
My buddy hadn't paid
you. You bought a piece of property and stopped tracking.
No. This was later on. So this was after I had. This was worse. This was after I had a chunk of real estate that was tracking. Okay. But
so you went a long period of time before you ever had to have the I don't have a rent conversation.
Yeah, and at that point I wasn't looking, and he hadn't paid me for like 5 months, and I was like texting him, like, "Hey, man." That's just weird. Looking online and
going back to the last episode about notices and how many days you have to give notices and then the amounts that have to be on those notices. And
the thing when you're house hacking, you're owner occupied, like those laws don't apply to you.
True.
It's easier to get people out. And that's something I knew. So I was way more comfortable starting out with that too.
Yeah. Even fair housing laws do not apply.
You can discriminate if you're living in a house, you can do all those different things. Don't quote me on that. Go ask an attorney.
Discriminate. Yeah.
But and should I put this out there?
Go ahead.
Landlords discriminate. You just are not supposed to discriminate against a protected class.
Let's not. Let's just say everybody discriminates.
No,
just more obvious.
No, what you mean by that is running credit and background checks and different things.
Yeah, so screening is an essential component of having success of owning real estate. It's we want to argue about it and throw emotions around it, but the logic says screening helps you.
Yeah. But back to the point is like you can discriminate against protected classes. I'm pretty sure about, go double check me on this, because when I was looking at it, it may be different.
If
you're living in the house.
Correct. With
them, because it's just your primary rent. So I was comfortable at that point. Like you didn't have to go through the 90-day notice of kicking everyone out and doing all that stuff if you had a bad tenant. So when I moved to this next house and repeated the model, I was moving in strangers and I had the same tenant fear as everyone else does. Like what happens if they don't pay me and all that? And I was like, oh, okay. In this case, it's even easier. I can get them out easier. So that alleviated some of my fears when I went and did the next one.
And you bought it 10 months later to the T.
Yep.
Same thing, turnkey, not a lot of work. How long did it take for you to find all those tenants and stop bleeding?
I found them all within the first 30 days.
Before your first mortgage payment was made, you collected rent.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So the reality is you can do this without bleeding.
Oh yeah. And it took me I put $14,500 into the first deal. And I think it was $20,000 I put into the second deal.
Okay.
So I was making 50 grand a year living for free so I could save up a down payment every single year.
And think about it. If the average rent's $1,500, that's 18 grand a year that you can save up for a down payment.
Correct.
So and that was your model. You bought one, two, wanting to go now buy three. That's still your model?
Yes. But then that's when I got my broker's license.
Okay.
And people started asking me about what I was doing. I started helping people do the same, which led us to where we're at now, and quit my W-2 job to do that full time. And that's when I realized I could no longer qualify. I kept house hacking through other people's loans at that point though.
So you got creative.
Got creative,
yeah. That's probably where your finance skill set really started to grow from, was out of need.
Yes, that's how I learned how to scale. That's how I learned how to do creative transactions. Cause that next transaction, right? So I go do it with a partner. He lives in it. We buy a fourplex. Do the same model, 3.5% down, 50-50. But now he bought it. He owns the property. He has to bring all the money to close it on the front end. How do I get to own part of it? So I realized, you can transfer title to a property to an LLC that we're each 50-50 owners in, and I can buy in that way. So that was like my first instance of like learning you don't have to do real estate just this exact one way.
Yeah. Did we talk about this recently where the actually most valuable education is the first education you get as a broker around ownership and title work, and it gets crapped on as like worthless education?
So it is. I went backwards because I bought these two houses before I ever did any brokering, which was kind of opposite.
Most people do. Most people don't realize how valuable, not until you've actually owned real estate and then had to work differently with deeds other than your just general warranty deed. Whenever you start understanding tax returns, partnership returns, then you realize that the real magic is in the ownership and the control of real estate. And that's where people like Grant Cardone, I don't know if he says this or Rich Dad Poor Dad says, I don't own anything. Bullshit. You own a lot of stuff. You just have that distinction of control versus ownership because of entities and finance and ownership methods.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you met Gabe. Was that before number three or after number three?
Oh, so that was at the time I was doing number three, like in the process of it, I think. Before number three, because he helped me find those properties kind of in a way. Mm-hmm. He gave me advice that led me there. But so I did the first two, and then I decided like, okay, I want to buy more properties. I don't know how. I was reading the books, continuing the education, and everyone said you can buy big apartments with no money, no credit, no, you know, none of that. So I was going into banks, and so I first heard that, started underwriting deals, underwrote 100 deals, learned how to underwrite, built my model out pretty basic to where I could look at a deal, be like, here's why someone would want to buy a deal. Here's how I want to buy a deal. So my plan was go put one of those deals under contract and then figure out the rest later, the debt and the equity for it.
So you went from a professional who is amateurly more educated than most buying real estate. Does that make sense?
It was a weird sentence.
That's one of my gifts. So you were a professional, but you're an amateur real estate, and you were just buying and collecting real estate. Mm-hmm. And then when you were forced into thinking a little bit more outside the box, that's when you really started to expand.
Yes, because at that point, I got the bug for it, because I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like, I'm looking at the mortgage statement. I'm seeing, you know, whatever, $1,000, $1,500 in principal going every single month. I'm checking Zillow, checking Redfin a year later and be like, oh, my house was worth $30,000 more than I paid for it. Like, that's half my salary just right there. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at my cash flow. I'm like, holy crap, I'm cash flowing by renting this thing out by the room like 20 to 30 grand on the year. That's half my salary. Like, I reached fire. Like, I didn't have, dude, I took 6 months of doing nothing because everything was covered. Like,
this is the process of becoming a deal junkie.
Yeah, I was addicted at that point. I was like,
so was it a lifestyle that created the addiction?
Dude, just doing deals was so much. Then once I started doing deals with partners, I was like, I just learned I love talking about deals, analyzing deals, doing deals.
Less like, lonely.
Yeah, it was like, because at first, for everyone listening, when you start out and you want to buy real estate and you're not around people who are buying real estate, they're all going to tell you you're crazy. They're going to tell you not to do it. Everyone told me, don't do this. They're going to burn down your house. They're going to do all this stuff. I had a goal in mind, and then I just cut ties with all the people telling me not to do it. And then I would just talk to whoever I could about it. And they usually didn't care, but I would just talk about it all the time. I was obsessed with this thing. Like, hey, here's what I'm trying to do. Here's why I'm doing it. And I was just, and then eventually you find people who want to do the same thing.
Okay. So then you just found your people. They fanned your flames of success you already had and then created a fire.
Yeah. Cause I go to a guy like Gabe, right? I'm like, hey, I bought these two properties. Here's what I'm trying to do. And he's like, yeah, that's a great idea. You should buy more, actually.
Yeah. On the note of goals and getting there, it's funny to watch each of yours grow over time and how it changed all of your everyday actions. And that's the bit. I mean, it's so obvious, and I hate to like put it out into the universe, but I love the I know that there's a lot of like, because the real side of it is that you don't put it out into the universe. You put it in your head. Once it's in your head, that's when your actions change every day. And that was the whole, I looked at a sheet that I filled out in 2019 yesterday. I actually took a picture of it, but it says, what are your future aspirations, dream, and personal goals or career-related goals? And it says own and operate businesses and own lots of real estate in 2019. Mm-hmm. And I was running a pest control business with no shot of owning real estate anytime soon, but I had seen a guy who, and worked for a guy who owned a bunch of real estate, and that's what put it in my head. And I didn't even enjoy it yet. Like, there was obviously, like, the pest control business, not that fun. Not great. I know. It sounds great.
It does.
Not that great. BBG, not the best. And then I didn't own any real estate, but I knew that that was the end goal. And frankly, I guess, you didn't even love buying real estate or like being, you had an end goal. And then because you knew that this took you there, that's when you started enjoying it. And I didn't, like, I was in the same boat where after I bought my first deal, I was signing the papers and it was just like, I didn't really feel like, you don't feel different is what I'll say, but you have to keep the vision of the end goal in mind and then enjoy everything you're doing along the way. And everybody, I mean, that's so like cliche, but that's really what it is. Like those papers, when you sign them, nothing changes. You don't feel better about
yourself. One deal won't change your life. If one deal does change your life, be careful.
Dude, on that, have you ever heard this? The universe is your ordering catalog.
No, break it down.
Dude, I fucking love that. Are you going into manifestation?
Kind of. I mean, that's one thing. It's kind of true. So like when you're talking about your goals and write them down, I did the same exact thing. So for people listening, if you want to make it real, write it down.
Absolutely.
Dude, even I never looked back on these. Like I wrote it down once because I heard you're supposed to. And I looked at it years later. I was like, holy shit, I just did like 80% of the things on this list. And I don't even remember what they were at that time. I just wanted to do them. And then I subconsciously went and did them. Mm-hmm. Now we're more intentional about it because we know how this works.
Mm-hmm.
You can make it happen faster.
Then the next step is reviewing them on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And once you review them on a regular basis, you can adjust them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So for beginners starting out, like figuring out your goal is like one of the key factors and it will change over time. Just pick one. It doesn't even matter what it is. If you just go and accomplish that, you'll see that you can truly do what you want to do. Like it's not this magical thing. Like I was able to cover all my living expenses within 10 months.
Mm-hmm. My 3-year goal on that sheet was to own 3 duplexes.
Well, you haven't really bought any duplexes.
And at the end of 2022, I had bought 3 duplexes that were part of State Street. Oh,
that's part of the 10 unit.
Yeah.
If you want 3 specific duplexes, I don't know if that counts.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty thing of, you know, manifestation. If it brings in something bigger, that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one quote of my good friend Gabriel Hamel, he believes in the law of attraction, but also the law of action. And you said it, you have to put it in your head first, and then you start changing your patterns. And when you change your patterns, that's what puts it into the universe. And when you then put it into the universe with behavioral changes and actions, then you meet Gabe. And then when you meet Gabe, then they start fanning your success. And when you have, that's the momentum. And everything in this is the... I had a really, really successful person reach out to me the past 2 days for some sidetracks that are happening in my life. And he boiled everything down to it.
Negative energy?
40 fucking years. You got to take some action and do it for 40 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you can change those time constructs like you've done a great job of doing, but you got to put in work and you got to do it for a period of time.
Yeah.
I want to do it faster. I don't want 40 years, Mike.
I agree. This guy's 40 years is put off a lot of value.
But yeah, so that was just us trying to dive into a roadmap and show you guys like what we've done with some beginner deals just to give you ideas. There's not one way to do it. That's just the way I did it. Dane did it a completely different way. He didn't even spend any of his own money and he just talked his way into deals.
The gift.
Mm-hmm.
Gift again.
Is there anything else you guys want to touch on for that?
No. I think the main takeaway, I mean, if you're listening to it, is like really sit down and set your lifetime vision. Is that, would I be happy if I got here? And then break it down year by year. I mean, Trevor and I do this all the time with each other. And that's the number one factor to at least getting closer to it.
Yeah.
Even if you're not going to hit it, you know the things that you need to break down to get there.
So even if you think about it, you don't even have to think about lifetime at the beginning. No. You can just think of the next point you are trying to get to. Mm-hmm. You know where you're at now, Z, where you're trying to get to, and then you just figure out step B. Once you figure out step B, step C will reveal itself, mm-hmm. and you kind of go down the path. So just getting started is the biggest thing.
No,
picking what you want to do and then taking the daily actions that get you there, or weekly or whatever it may be.
No question. And I think a lot of people get hung up on G. they get hung up on H.
I think they have no reason to get.
That's what I'm saying. No.
They get hung up at the beginning
yes. trying to solve for H.
Yeah.
And don't solve for H. Once you're in escrow, just get in escrow. Write an offer on a deal. Okay, well, I can't write an offer yet. Okay, underwrite deals, then write offers, then get an escrow.
Exactly.
Then go through 4 inspections, turn down 3 because there's things that you don't understand. That's fine. That was your step, you know, that was your step G. But you can't say, well, how am I going to fix the crawl space? How am I going to fix the roof? How am I going to...
Before you get there. Yeah.
Before you've done it. And so I think that's the biggest like takeaway is the action piece. But anyways.
One last thought. Find someone to celebrate with.
Mike Nuss will celebrate with you. Come to his meetup. We'll celebrate with you. Come to our meetup.
Get down.
Mike P. Nuss. All right. That concludes our episode of Deal Junkies. Talked about a couple deals. Talked about how to get there. Thanks for listening, guys.